Pete Rose is like a legendary badass with like a hilarious goofy haircut. Like people forget that he full on rocked the like fucking what's his name in No Country for Old Men.
Oh, shit.
Javier Bardem.
Yeah, that is the Pete Rose haircut. And Pete Rose was taken seriously wearing that haircut. People were like, that's Pete Rose. He fucking rules. Awesome baseball player. Like, I will bet that kids on the schoolyard emulated the Pete Rose haircut. It's the stupidest haircut ever, but
it really is. But granted, considering like his baseball playing prowess, I'm sure nobody cared.
Do you think it was just one of those things, like a bet? I'll bet you it was a bet where somebody was like, I'll bet you can't have the stupidest haircut. And he was just like, fucking watch me.
Because we know how he likes to gamble.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, yeah, I'll fucking rock this shit for years. Fuck you. I guarantee you. I'll have little kids showing up for games. Pete Rose is the Lloyd Christmas of baseball.
Yes.
To me, he always reminded me of, what is it, Baron Von Underbite from the Venture Brothers when they do the flashbacks and he's got like that, he basically has the Pete Rose haircut. Or like, you know what it is? It really reminds me, honestly, of like, I don't know, those old like maybe medieval movies, like those frontier movies where there's always like one of those like Faulknerian, like idiot man children. You know, it's like the really big guy who's kind of slow who always has like the bad haircut. Oh, but that haircut haunts my dreams. I swear to God.
It's phenomenal. I love like the old baseball clips, though, because like Pete Rose and Babe Ruth both kind of run like they got a fucking load in their pants. You watch him rounding the bases. It's that same run that you do when you know you're not going to make it to the toilet, but you got to try your hardest. Like, it is the run of a champion in the truest sense.
You know, that explains why Pete Rose would go head first into a base and not bottom first.
Exactly.
You see the haircut coming, like, hey, down.
You know how there was a whole documentary, like Chris Rock did that documentary, Good Hair, and then there was a documentary about a comb-over? I would watch a documentary called The Pete Rose Haircut.
I gotta see if Brad Pitt can rock the Pete Rose haircut. I think I got a Photoshop project tonight.
Oh, totally.
Oh my God, please tag me in that if you post it.
I'm really wanting a Pete Rose haircut now.
Oh, God. At least, you know what? At least rock a wig. Don't commit to the haircut just yet.
I did, before I left Twitter, I had the great hair wars, right? Trying to figure out who had the best hair. And it was David Lynch, Morrissey, Kurt Russell, and Patrick Swayze. And Swayze won. I want somebody to do a poll on Twitter and have it be Swayze versus Pete Rose for best hair and just see who wins.
Oh, man. That's why I almost want to do like a live show at one point, just to do something ridiculous like that. Just have like this ticker of, okay, we're here at the haircut vigil.
I have tweeted out the best hair tweet. And we are getting votes currently, so we can figure it out once and for all. It's Pete Rose versus Patrick Swayze. And at the end of the, it's not looking good for Pete Rose, you guys.
You want to take a smoke break?
I super do. You read my mind. That is like the sign of the ultimate podcasting partner. Just like, you're aching to smoke now, aren't you, bro? Like, cool.
So, Adrian, if you got to use a restroom or you don't smoke, do you?
Not cigarettes.
Yeah. Oh, vape it up. What? Or weed it up.
Yeah. Like, or I mean, I guess like crack it up. But like,
yeah. Oh, you can't even. Probably oh, don't. Do any episode of Adrian has issues now. The sweet, sweet crack taste in my mouth.
Dude, you are remarkably coherent for a crack smoker.
Sweet, sweet crack.
All right, we got an intro for the show now. That's getting dry.
Oh, God.
These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know. These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know. Some of them are Davids,
but most of us are Daves.
They all have their own hands, but they come from different moms.
Welcome to the Dave Podcast, episode 13. This week, Foo Fighter, Dave Grohl.
We are the Daves he knows, he knows. We are the Daves he knows. are the days I know, I know.
We are the days we know.
You know, these are the days.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dave Podcast. I'm the Green Korean.
I'm Octopus Caveman.
And joining us today is Adrian from Adrian Has Issues. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. This has been pretty crazy. Big fan of the show.
Big fan of your show.
Aw.
You kept me sane the other day while I was in at the DMV. I had to go to the DMV 3 times in 1 week, and I made it out sane with a little help from you and Josh and Melissa over at the One With. You guys were in my head and kept me together.
That's still crazy. The fact that I'm responsible for somebody's sanity, like, that never really happened. So I rode that compliment for the rest of the day. So after that, everybody's like, look, I kept somebody from going berserk at a DMV. You should be thankful I'm around.
So I've been a fan of your show for a while now. I think it started. Okay, so I have a funny story. I don't know if I told this to you before. And you were so excited about Star Wars Episode 7. The Force Awakens, you were riding this high. And the first time I saw it, I came out and I was kind of a little bit disappointed. And I expressed some of my displeasure on Twitter. And you and I had been going back and forth at that point. And I said a couple things. And like, you stopped responding. I was like, oh no, I lost a friend that I like.
Yeah, you know what it was? Like, I totally forgot about that. And now that I think about it, I was like, holy shit, I probably came off like an asshole.
No, but I felt so shitty because you clearly enjoyed it. It took you to a place that you loved and enjoyed it, and here I am, the guy coming in and shitting on that. So what you did was 100% correct. And in viewing that movie since then, it's kind of like, okay, here's the thing. When I watch a season of Doctor Who, I always leave it going, meh, it wasn't that good. And then upon rewatching, right, I'm like, wow, that was my favorite season ever. That's kind of how I feel about Star Wars.
No, but the thing is, you were pretty measured in your response. It wasn't like, this is the biggest piece of garbage I've ever watched. Yours was just kind of like, you know what? You know, I watched it. It wasn't really for me. So I think automatically you were in a much better camp than some people who seemed like they were really going out of their way to be really, like, terrible about the movie just to kind of poke holes in people. But no, I don't think you were doing that at all.
You know what? The thing is, people had to do that because I was there when episode 1 came out and everybody was fucking stoked on it until long after episode 3 was over. You didn't have people dumping on it leaving the movie theater. Everybody was fucking excited. We all fell for it. We were stoked on those movies, and it was a long time before we were like, you know what, these kind of suck. So everybody wanted to preemptively be the cool hater, I think. And we're like, you know what, fuck this one. But you know what, kind of fuck that one.
No, Star Wars 7, I think it's a really, really good movie. But
it's an okay movie, but they're going to make them. It's the beginning of the end.
No, I think they're going to go in great places. 8, I can't wait. 9, I can't wait. Rogue One, I can't wait. I think they're going terrific places with this franchise.
I'll see Kid Jabba, but fuck the rest of them.
Kid Jabba. Like, that's your barometer of how good the movie's going to be?
No, I know they're going to hit the point of failure, and they're going to suck eventually. Disney does that. There's fucking how many Little Mermaids now? We don't need terrible Little Mermaid sequels. They'll just make them forever until they suck. It's going to happen.
Yeah, that's his criticism of Disney. They just go 102, 103, 104 Dalmatians, Little Mermaid 5. Like, they just milk it till it's dry. So that's what he's afraid that they're going to do to Star Wars.
I can't be too mad about that, though. I mean, yeah, we all have every reason to be afraid. But so far, they're, what, 1 for 3?
Yeah, they made an okay movie, but there's no end date, so it's not special. Even the prequels were special because we knew there was only 3 of them, so we went and we enjoyed that experience. George Lucas was a man with a vision. He gave us his vision, just like Jim Cameron with the first 2 Terminators. And then he was like, I'm done. I had a story to tell. I told it in 2 movies, and then now we're on, like, what, 5? You know, once a franchise gets away from its original creator, the fucking wheels fall off. Like, have you seen what happened to Highlander?
I highly disagree, but granted, I know, this is leading down a dark path. You're going to debate Star Wars, and I don't know. I personally feel like Lucas was basically the epitome of cry for help. All right, I'll say this, and I'll leave it at this. A friend of mine, my best friend, we have a podcast called Ignoring Movies, which is basically kind of like our version of what you guys do with the Dave Podcast, where it's, you know, no interviews, it's just kind of cutting back and, you know, enjoying ourselves. The only difference is usually movie on in the background as we do so. So I went on this hour long, less of a rant and just more of my theory of how Steven Spielberg basically knew that Lucas was kind of losing his mind by the early 90s once he started to get the idea for the prequels. So he pretty much wrote Jurassic Park as a metaphor for his, like, you know, close friends, you know, slow descent into madness. Because think about, you know, the story of George Lucas and the story of, like, Hammond in that movie. Basically, you have, you know, it's like this big bearded guy with glasses full of childlike wonder. And, you know, he's got all this technology and these wonderful things that he can't wait to show the world and yet has yet to think about the ramifications of doing so. So he, you know, how, like, Jeff Goldblum said, you know, he's so, you know, preoccupied, you know, about, like, you know, the how but never thought about the why. Oh, I forget the line, but basically, I feel like Spielberg felt that about Lucas, where he essentially was just kind of like, you know, like he saw that he was kind of like his lust for just, you know, making this grand spectacle. You know, he forgot about the logic. He forgot about whether or not it's a good idea. So he wrote Jurassic Park, or at least the movie version of the book, as a way to kind of tell the story about his friend who clearly was losing his mind.
That's interesting. And I think that, the line was something along the lines of, you were so preoccupied if you could, you didn't even think about if you should.
Huh. So yeah, I think Lucas was kind of already losing his firm grip on Star Wars, because by the time it became a phenomenon, it became less his and it would kind of like belong to the world. Yeah. And I think that bothered him in a way. So the prequels and everything after that really just felt like a cry for help until he had his inevitable meltdown, where he just had to give away his baby and eventually regret it, because I think he thought it was going to suck. But yet, Star Wars thrived and became more popular than it had been in a very long time without him. And I think that really burns him.
Yeah, see, but if I get four guys in a fucking room and I say, make me a Ramones record, it's not a Ramones record.
Oh, you're one of those guys. Okay.
Yeah, kind of. But look at Disney and their track record with purchasing Marvel. They have yet to put out a bad movie. At worst, they've put out a good movie.
Right.
You know, because they hire the best people to put these out. Now, when we were talking about Disney and Little Mermaid 2, 3, 4, Lion King 1 and a half, those are direct-to-video. They know they're putting out crap. That's why they're not even running it in the theater. They know they're milking it. They know what they're doing. But when it comes to Star Wars, I mean, I think that's the jewel in the Disney empire. They're going to treat it very well and put out product, quality product, I think.
You can never make infinity good movies.
I mean, I know you're right, and I know there's going to come a point where, I don't know, and maybe this leads into who we're going to be talking about tonight, the idea that even if you're not, you know, breaking box office records, does that necessarily quantify being a good movie? Because, you know, let's be honest, like, as far as the quality of the Marvel movies are, Pixar. You know, it's pretty subjective. Or Pixar, too. Yeah. Because Pixar is still making, I think, pretty good movies, but they're not all the big spectacles that, like, let's say Toy Story is. Toy Story is like an event. You know, every time one comes out, you know, they pull out all the stops. But, you know, the last few movies really haven't been at that caliber. But does that necessarily mean that they're bad?
No, they're still B-plus movies. They're not A movies, but they're still putting out B-plus movies. And I'm of the mind of, you're 100% correct. You can't have a perfect track record, but let's enjoy the ride till we hit the road bump.
Oh boy. we're slim pickings and you guys are just screaming yeehaw as you ride the bomb into the ground.
Damn right. I'm gonna have
all
a
right,
good
look,
time.
Now you understand as you drop like Stanley Kubrick references? Okay, see? And like no matter how much you try to be a curmudgeon, I think we're actually currently getting along very famously.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we can bond over the Pete Rose haircut.
And we haven't even gotten
into
music yet.
Stop being funny.
No.
And I'm really upset that you quit Twitter because I think you just found your new avatar.
Oh, man, I totally did. Well, I'll have to go edit my MySpace. You know, that's my last bastion.
Yeah.
Not even stalkers go to MySpace.
All right.
Not anymore, anyway.
Not even fucking Tom goes to MySpace. That guy's got a Twitter, and he's like, fuck y'all, I'm out.
All right. Should we roll into the Dave news?
Joining us now here in Los Angeles, Dave Dave. That's his name, Dave Dave.
You know why I love the news? It's so topical.
Holy shit, I just found Dave news about Pete Rose.
That's not even a thing. Okay, can we just, okay, we'll just, all right, here, the reasoning is he had his hair is named Dave.
Nope, it's legitimate Dave news, but I'm gonna have to use this now.
Okay, I'll allow it.
All right, so I've got like eight, man, because I've got a backstage news girl working for me who sent me just killer stuff.
Pick your best two.
Should we open with the Pete Rose news story?
Go ahead. Because honestly, let's just ride this bomb straight to the ground.
This is from theinterrobang.com. Pete Rose is starting some shit with David Ortiz.
Oh, so it does count. Nice.
The all-time hit king, Pete Rose, called Big Poppy David Ortiz a borderline Hall of Famer, and he said he needed to play a few more years if he really wants to get in based on the amount of hits he has. Pete Rose should not be the expert on how to get into the Hall of Fame. But it looks like he's giving David Ortiz some shit. But I love me some David Ortiz. So that is tremendously fitting.
I don't know. That doesn't seem like he's necessarily talking shit as it is. It's like, it seems like almost a backhanded compliment, but in true Pete Rose fashion, he can't tell that he's, you know, he can't tell people that he's a fan. So he's going to come at him like kind of like a little dickish, but he's secretly kind of giving him praise. He's like, you're almost there, but yet, you know, you got to give it a couple more years to really kind of find your footing.
Plus, David Ortiz doesn't give a shit. He doesn't speak English.
However, that guy throws a tantrum like nobody's business.
I love me some David Ortiz, man.
I'm not even a Red Sox fan. However, just watching that dude flip out in the dugout is one of the greatest things in our world.
It really is.
I don't watch much baseball.
I got that. Neither do I, but I mean, I will watch some good, you know, fight or, you know, meltdown footage.
Although I did go to a Dodger game a few weeks back, and my observation was, because we bought like the cheapest tickets possible, so we were at the very top of the stadium in right field. And my thinking was, to get back to the car, we, you know, you got to get into the crowds and lines and down the escalators, and I just thought, why don't they build a zip line from the top of the stadium straight into the parking lot?
Oh my God, that'd be the greatest thing. Could you imagine a bunch of drunken baseball fans on a zip line? That'd be the greatest thing in the world.
That would be the best thing at the park.
So many lawsuits, so many like severed spinal columns.
So many drunk fans just puking on the way down.
And streakers would just use it as the freeway to the field.
Oh my God, okay. That would be great if, because you know there's going to be that one guy who's going to go in dressed as either Batman or like some really horrible, like dirty version of that, and he's going to swing down with the theme song playing and scare like a bunch of like, you know, kids that are going around a field trip.
You know, I want to see someone dressed up like Dancing Homer.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's one of my favorite episodes. Like, even as like a non-baseball fan, like the baseball related episode of The Simpsons, like I could do a whole episode just based on those alone. There's much fun.
Are you guys into Simpson Wave?
Wait, what?
Have you heard of Simpson Wave? It's vaporwave using Simpson clips. Do yourself a favor, go to YouTube at some point and look up Simpson Wave. It's sort of a video and musical style. It's remarkable.
That sounds amazing.
I went down the rabbit hole with that shit, and like 5 hours later, I was just like, "Simpson Wave is the greatest music ever made." It's remarkable.
Holy crap! That sounds like a lot of fun.
I got a news story that comes from exclaim.ca. Axl Rose returns Dave Grohl's throne in pieces.
Oh, that fucking dick!
Never one to shy away from hilarious headlines. Guns N' Roses made their return in a rather amusing fashion. After getting injured at a comeback gig in L.A., Axl Rose borrowed Dave Grohl's now-famous guitar throne for his seated onstage theatrics. Well, now that Rose is back up and around, it seems that he returned the throne to its rightful owner, though perhaps not all in one piece. A recent interview with Guns N' Roses production manager, he revealed that the chair has now been returned to Grohl, and while he didn't go into tons of detail, some of what he said is a bit disconcerting. We gave the chair back, yes, they got the chair back. In parts, but they got it. So far, we have not heard any complaints from Grohl's camp.
That's crazy.
See, Dave Grohl's got to be cool about it and be like rock and roll and not shit on him. I mean, he's pretty media savvy about not dumping on people, like not ever saying anything about Courtney Love all these years.
Yeah.
When I'm pretty sure she killed Kurt Cobain or had something to do with it.
Oh, yeah, but he was smart and did it in music.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, I don't know if this is one of those clickbait type headlines where it came back in pieces because it was damaged or they disassembled it to ship it back.
Right. That could just be like how you have to ship it. You know, like a lot of things travel in pieces. Like when the Batmobile goes to tour Europe, it's shipped in pieces, you know?
Right. So I don't know. You never know with clickbait these days.
Yeah, you don't really. But I got to say, if I broke a leg and I had to go tour, my fucking rock throne would just be a toilet on wheels.
Yeah, but then your legs would get numb, and you kind of stand up during one of the encores, and you just fall out. Yeah. Trust me. Like it sounds more cool than it probably really is.
Yeah. You can't help yourself, and you pull out your phone, you start to tweet. Come on.
I have sort of created a rock throne in a sense. Like years ago, I had one of those toilet seat extenders where it's like a toilet seat, but it's just on four prongs just to make your toilet seat higher for older people so they can dump in it more comfortably and get up off the toilet. So I took one of those and drilled it onto two skateboards, and we called it the Enforcer, and it was a blast to bomb hills on, but that would be my rock throne, just the Enforcer, just me sitting on this little, like, toilet extender. All right, I've got some great Dave news, and this was sneaky Dave news. I just read this because it was remarkable, and it turned out to be Dave news. Man fights to keep pizza-eating pet alligator.
What?
Yes. A man said he will do whatever it takes to keep his pet alligator after Florida wildlife officials told him it was too big to roam in his garden. Of course, it's from Florida. Retired firefighter David Van Buren has looked after the 13-foot male named Gwendolyn for 47 years. The creature whose favorite treats include pizza and cookies has been with him since he was a boy. He even took him to college with him.
What?
The court decided that he gets to keep his alligator, but he's got to make some changes to his property. So I have so many questions about this. Why is there a male alligator named Gwendolyn? How is it not dead when it lives on pizza and cookies like a stoner? And what is wrong with this guy? This guy is clearly like a put together enough individual that he can be a firefighter? Or is it just that he's a Florida firefighter and maybe it's just easier to get in there? Like, well, you're not drunk now, so yeah, you got the job.
Florida.
Now, my question is, how could we secure the film rights to that movie? Like, Big Croc on campus? Like, this dude, like, it's like this crocodile, like, it's on campus with them, and, you know, it's like taking, you know, bong hits, and it's, you know, going on panty raids. Like, it's very much like Animal House, but instead it's like the guy at the frat's a fucking alligator or a croc rather.
Oh, you know that, yeah, for sure people were like, let's get the alligator stoned, bro. Like, I guarantee you that alligator has been stoned, has been drunk, has eaten a full beer can, maybe like you know, a frat brother at some point went missing and they're like, yeah, maybe he went home. I would watch Big Croc on Campus, though. That would be a badass movie. Pixar, get on it.
Shit, that's amazing.
And my news story comes from metalinjection.net. Suicidal Tendencies post their first taste of new music with Dave Lombardo. Originally, former Slayer drummer Dave Lombardo was supposed to be a fill-in drummer for Suicidal Tendencies, but I guess the dudes had so much fun jamming together that the frontman Mike Muir invited Dave to the studio to record with the band. Over the weekend, Suicidal Tendencies revealed they will release their next album, World Gone Mad, on September 30th, which features drumming from Lombardo.
Interesting.
Nice. Yeah.
I haven't listened to them in a very long time, but every so often like, I'll check in with them. It's like, hey, you know what? I never thought this band would still be around after all these years, and you know, they're pretty consistent.
Yeah. Yeah,
see, the problem with that band is their fan base, because that is one of those bands that just seems to have like like, oh my God, shots fired again. But like a lot of like white power shitheads like that band. And then like a lot of like punk rock Vato shitheads like that band. Like, if like their fan base is on par with ICP as being pretty terrible.
I don't know. At least it's not like Pantera's fan base. You know, you want to talk white power, but that leads into a whole other episode.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're talking to a white power.
Oh, Jesus.
No,
God.
I am a Pantera fan, but I totally know what you mean. Same thing with like Hatebreed. Like for some reason,
yeah,
that's just like, I'm just gonna avoid that show because no thanks. I don't want to hang out with a bunch of white power dudes. So
yeah,
I want
to be
never...
a black dude into metal because it's like 9 out of 10 times I look around like any moment I'm gonna get jumped.
Well, yeah, I mean you got like Russ from Zayow, and then like what Living Color, the dude from Fuck, what's that? Yeah, I mean it's
the Seven Dust.
Yeah, dude from Seven Dust. Yeah, there's a few. Yeah, being a black dude into metal kind of sucks because you just a bunch of white power dickheads.
That's not funny, but it kind of is.
Metal sucks. Fuck metal.
A message from Octopus Caveman.
Yeah, we've just laid out the bands that are okay to listen to if you're into metal because we're free and clear from the racism. Because even like black metal and stuff, like weirdly, despite the name, we'll throw in like weird racist shit in there just out of nowhere. And you're like, oh, this isn't a white power band. But then you're like, I'm pretty sure this is about the Nazis.
You know what I mean? Funny because it's true.
Yeah, you're just like, holy shit, is this about eugenics?
That's so horrible.
There's something about being white power that just like attracts the worst dudes, but they're dudes that are used to confrontation. So you encounter like a white power dude in his 30s, he has had thousands more fist fights than the average dude of that same age.
And that's the part that's always just disturbing me, because you know, I get it, you're at a metal show or a hardcore show and people are fighting. But it's always ends up being, you know, it's always, granted though, in my experience, it's always the dude who shows up who clearly looks like he burned at least 3 crosses before he showed up. But yet he's like the nicest dude in the pit, you know, he's picking people up, he's helping them out. And it always ends up being like the really young, like hipsterish looking kid who's like the biggest dickhead. Cause at least, you know, the old school metal guy at least remembers moshing and at least remembers like the codes that are a part of it. And at least isn't just windmill kicking people in the face.
Yeah. But the dude who shows up with the tank top and zero deodorant and the suicidal tendencies cap with the bill turned up, and like he shows up half in the bag, that guy's a motherfucker too. He's the dude who just like randomly forms a circle pit and starts it by pushing over your girlfriend.
Mm. Yeah, well, exactly.
And that's why I only go to Taylor Swift concerts.
Let's be that guy at the Taylor Swift concert. Let's all three
mosh there too.
Yeah, let's go see Taylor Swift and just start moshing in like the middle of like some fucking like 13-year-old girls. We'll just get super hardcore about it.
The worst thing that's going to happen there is you'll start a Twitter war, and that's about it.
Yeah, but trust me, you'd rather get punched in the face than get flamed by Taylor Swift fans on Twitter.
That's a very good point, because emotionally, I'm just crushed.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You'll heal from the cuts and bruises.
Yeah, you can heal from that. You can't heal from the emotional damage.
Why do you want little girls to like you? Fuck them. Bring it on, bitches.
Oh, Jesus.
Come to my MySpace.
No, that's why that site got shut down in the first place. Well, not shut down, but you know.
It's still so active. You have no idea.
Oh, is it really? So is there anybody on there that aren't like either musicians or like adult stars?
Ooh, no, it's pretty much that. And that's why it's a rad party. MySpace now is like the Playboy Mansion in the 70s. It's just musicians and adult stars doing cocaine in the fucking hot tub and just like no condoms allowed. It's getting gross and it's getting weird and I like it.
Yeah, you're describing Vegas, man.
Everything comes full circle.
Yeah, how is MySpace not more popular if that's the case?
It's because it's elite, you know?
It's just
one of those things. You got to have that like $100 iPhone app where you have to prove that you're a millionaire. Have you heard of that thing?
No.
There is a $100 iPhone app.
Okay, yes, I have heard about that.
Yeah.
Where it does nothing. It's just that you have the app on your phone. It shows that you're wealthy.
You have to prove you're a millionaire, and then it's kind of like Groupon for millionaires.
Oh, I heard about like a really expensive app where it was like $100,000, and it does absolutely nothing, but you have the privilege of showing people that you have this app on your phone, which shows that you're wealthy.
Right. There's one that is reserved just for millionaires. You get the app, and then you have to send them records to prove your wealth, and then you get to keep the app, and they will send you like Groupon deals for millionaires. Like, hey, cheap flights to Tahiti from, you know? Yeah.
All right.
Fucking choose who dies.
It's basically like Hostel, but just the, you know.
Yeah, it's like the people who really control everything. They're like, who's replacing Anton Yelchin?
Yeah.
Ooh, oh, no.
Way to make it sad again. Sorry, guys.
For a split second, I thought you were talking politics and who was going to overthrow Boris Yelchin. Boris Yeltsin. That's why I was laughing, and I thought about it. I went, no, you fucker, that's a Star Trek guy. God damn it, I like him. See, that seems like a bigger rich person move. Let's replace the Russian president.
Yeah, who wants hungry?
With a swipe of a finger. Swipe.
That should be the motto for the country of Hungary. Just like, we're for sale.
Who's hungry?
It's like political Tinder.
Don't you wish they just made TV dinners in Hungary? Like, if you looked it up and their number one export was the hungry man, like, wouldn't you just be like, fuck yes?
All right, let's get out of the news. And what do you say we head into our featured, Dave?
Let's do it.
I'm just going to play a happy tune.
Here comes the featured Dave. Here comes the featured Dave.
And thank you to the Dave Podcast for that wonderful, that awesome intro.
Wait, are they the Dave Podcast? Or are we? They're Dave the Podcast. This is so confusing.
I worry about it all the time when I retweet some of their stuff that people are going to think, did you change your logo?
Yeah.
But they're
the best.
I love
those guys, though. Yeah, thanks awesome. So much for that intro music is my favorite. That's sticking with us till the end of time.
Yeah, so thanks, Dave the Podcast. So for our feature, Dave this week, Adrian suggested that we do Dave Grohl for our featured Dave, and it sounded like a good idea to me.
Yes, so, indeed.
And coming into this, I knew nothing about Dave Grohl. I knew that he was part of Nirvana and Foo Fighters, and of course I know the hits. Very familiar with the hits, but I've never got into the deep stuff. And I gotta say, buddy, thank you so much for suggesting Dave Grohl, because this has been the best day ever.
Yeah, and it's funny, I have been a Foo Fighters fan, and this is the part that I hate admitting to myself because people get very angry about it. But okay, you know, not that I have anything to hide, but I was born in 84. Mm-hmm. And while music was a very big thing in my household growing up, we pretty much listened to everything under the sun, you know, it wasn't really until the early to mid 90s that I started to kind of discover music for myself, because at that point, everything else was, you know, the stuff that I listened to with my parents. So I kind of skipped a lot of the Nirvana era. I mean, I was aware of it, and I remember very vividly watching Smells Like Teen Spirit and other Nirvana videos on MTV. But yet, by the time I kind of became cognizant of, you know, buying my own music, or at least just kind of discovering it for myself, Nirvana was pretty much already done and over with. So Foo Fighters kind of became the first big band that I got into. Well, it was them, Sponge, and okay, I can't remember the other band. Fuck them. Okay. But but yeah, Foo Fighters was that band that, for whatever reason, I just got into. And I couldn't tell you what it was. I just remember being 10 years old, playing with my action figures, as I did, a lot of Fridays. And next, you know, they did, a back-to-back. So it was, a two-for-two of This Is a Call and I'll Stick Around off of that first album, and I don't know what it was. It was just sort of I know the other band. It was Presidents of the United States of America, because that's not a 90s memory at all.
Right. She's lump, she's lump, she's lump.
Exactly.
She's in my head.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, but yeah, Foo Fighters were just my thing, and ever since then, like, I've been a massive fan.
That's awesome. And let's focus, I mean, let's focus mostly on the Foo, because Dave was part of one of the, you know, biggest rock bands in history, Nirvana, but he wasn't the front man.
Right.
Yeah.
And people let him know that for a very long time, and it's funny, considering the number of years that Foo Fighters have had, you know, chart-topping hits, but it really wasn't until fairly recently that people started to give him his due, because for a very long time, people, I think... resented the fact that he wanted a career outside of Nirvana. And especially the fact that what people don't realize is that very first album was really like a solo project that he was working on while still in Nirvana, because I think it kind of bugged him a little bit. At least from what I've read, not that it really bothered him necessarily, but yeah, it felt like he wasn't necessarily, you know... Like, Nirvana was Kurt's thing, and he, I think they had a deep respect for each other, and he didn't necessarily want, you know, his music to necessarily influence, you know, whether it be positively or negatively, Kurt Cobain and what he was doing. So a lot of his other recordings, and what I was just reading today, is the fact that that first album was a lot of demo stuff that he was recording on the side, and shoot, what was the name of the B-side?
You're our expert, bro.
Oh, shoot. I just had that.
It was a B-side for Nirvana?
It was basically like a demo they were recording that it was intended to just kind of be a Dave Grohl thing, but I guess Kurt Cobain heard it and really liked it, and it became a B-side to a Nirvana song.
Oh, cool. Cool.
And, you know, once that, you know, once Nirvana disbanded it, you know, then he sort of pushed it, and then... you know, kind of gave those first demos like a nice studio mixing, and then, you know, for Nirvana. And it's just really cool because Dave really was my favorite part of that band. And again, I'm going to piss off a lot of people, but Kurt Cobain was my least favorite part of Nirvana. Because Dave Grohl's drumming, Chris Novoselic's bass lines, like the rhythm section was probably the best part of that band. And yet... it was kind of sad that Chris didn't really join him on that, but yet I just really, really love Foo Fighters. And the fact that I think to this day, there really aren't too many just solid rock bands anymore. And I'm not necessarily whining, because as far as music goes, I'm pretty much digging the majority of stuff that's out, at least from what I hear. But if you really sit down and think about, you know, just stripped down, honest to goodness, you know, guitars and drums kind of rock, there really aren't too many bands around. And it's like Foo Fighters may be one of the last, you know, just like true rock bands left. And it's weird. Like, they get a lot of flack now. Cause I don't know. Maybe they're just, people are just too cynical for that now. But Dave just seems like a pretty cool guy. And, you know, he's had his fair share of problems, you know, especially when recording that second album, as I first found out that he kind of went over the head of the other drummer and re-recorded it himself without his knowledge. But, you know, he's, you know, had his fair share of dickish moments, but he generally seems like a guy that is just pretty chill. He's kind of like Andrew WK without the partying necessarily.
Yeah.
How hard does that fucker party if he's straight edge?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen him live, and it's pretty nuts.
Was that like a cake and ice cream, like fucking 12-year-old party, and he shows up all psyched and like, yeah, like he's not party life. Andrew WK, that is not party. Like the dude that I want representing the party is like Spicoli. That's a dude. No, not
a party. First off, there's nothing wrong with a cake and ice cream. As a fat man, that is like the two greatest things ever invented.
Put Andrew WK next to Spuds McKenzie, and I will tell you who the king of the party is.
I'm pretty sure that dog is dead.
The dog surrounded by beer and hot chicks is the king of the party. Andrew WK is just, he's just like a clean living dude trying to be cool. I got your number, Andrew, and fuck you. You suck.
Wow, he evokes Spuds fucking McKenzie. Like,
I'm secretly 50. That's why I'm still on MySpace.
Oh, and AOL.
Yeah, I've got an AOL email account, and I'm psyched about my LinkedIn notifications.
Hey, at least you still don't have like an Earthlink account.
I might. I gotta talk. Dave is an amazing, like, spider web, where, I mean, like, we could do a million episodes on Dave Grohl because it would give us an in to so many different bands that he's played with.
Yeah.
Oh, there's tons of them. And that's crazy.
He's been a session drummer for a lot of horrible, horrible bands and then some awesome ones too. So here's a short list. Garbage, Christine Young, Nine Inch Nails, David Bowie, Paul McCartney, The Prodigy. Remember Smack My Bitch Up?
Yeah.
Slash, Iggy Pop, Juliet and the Licks, Tenacious D. He is basically the third member of Tenacious D.
Yeah, and I think he was kind of crucial in sort of bumping them up. But I mean, yeah, they had the HBO show, but they were in a good chunk of his videos. Matter of fact, did you guys ever see the video for, what was the Foo Fighters song, Low, that got banned from MTV?
No.
Where it's essentially Dave Grohl and Jack Black, like, they're playing, like, these, kind of like these bumpkin types that they meet up, they're outside his motel room, and it's pretty much the entire video is just them, like, this all-night bender of just them, like, doing drugs and, like, wearing, like, women's clothing, and just, it gets really creepy. But
when he's the devil in the greatest song in the world, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's not called that. It's called Tribute, right?
No, I know what you meant, though.
Yeah. And then he had Jack Black sing on his Probot project as well, which the Probot stuff is pretty sweet. Like, I do like that he reached out to, you know, like, metal dudes that he liked and was like, come be on this album. He did a metal version of what Santana did with that Ghastly album that had Rob Thomas and shit on it. And
oh, yeah. But it was cool, though, because he's pretty much grew up in, you know, the punk scene, and, you know, and he gets a lot of respect from, like, the metal crowd. I mean, he plays pretty straight-laced alternative rock. But, yeah, it's pretty respected throughout most genres. Like, I can't be mad at that.
And that Mentos video was pretty funny at the time.
Oh, it's still great.
I got through the first three albums, and then I listened to the current album. They have like 12 albums, I think it is.
It's kind of a lot. So the fact that you got to, well, the first three are arguably kind of like the original trilogy of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, they're pretty much just like the creme de la creme and like the height of their career. And I would argue that the rest of them are still pretty solid, but I think the first three are pretty much like the best that they've done.
That you just nailed it with the trilogy of Star Wars, because I thought the first album, it was a pretty good rock album. I really enjoyed it. The second one blew my mind. I got to go out and buy that later on tonight. The third one, I thought, here's what I wrote. My notes were, it's a little too melodic and predictable, but it's still good.
Yeah, I think that one was at a weird time, especially since, you know, Foo Fighters have had as many lineup changes as like Saturday Night Live and the Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
Where it seemed like every album there was a different lineup. Let's see, because like I said, he had that feud with the guy from Sunny Day Real Estate, like the first drummer who left. Then Taylor Hawkins came in, then Pat Smear left. Then he brought in one of his buddies, Franz Stahl, who then just kind of fucked off not too long after.
Yeah.
And it just felt like between that and the people who were, I think, Nirvana apologists, who really just seemed to hate everything the band did.
Yeah.
It just felt like, I think there's a reason why he named the album There's Nothing Left to Lose, because at that point it's like, fuck it. Like, I mean,
right.
And that whole album was really kind of like their break into was like adult alternative. Like, you know, he cut his hair, he was clean shaven, he was, you know, wearing like clothing. And it was just really weird to see Foo Fighters in that regard. But yet it was cool to see that, hey, yeah, we can be your kind of like grungy band. We make fun of like Mentos commercials and stuff. But yet when we want to sit down and like play like honest to goodness rock, like we're, you know, we can do that.
But it was, I mean, what is it? The Color and the Shape is just such a fucking great solid rock album. Holy shit. I just dug that from beginning to end.
And did you listen to the Japanese version where it actually had the title track Color and the Shape?
Probably not. I listened to whatever was available on, what is it, Spotify.
If you ever get a chance to listen to, like, the, I think it's either the Japanese or the import version,
yeah,
there's a couple of bonus tracks on that where I think they did a cover of, what's the Gary Numan song when he was with Two Boy Army, Down in the Park? Okay. Like, really solid cover, but yet there was a title track, Color and the Shape, I think was meant to be on the album, but it's loud. Like this, at that point, I think that's the heaviest they've been, because it's basically Dave screaming and them kind of like borderline metal. And it's so sad that it was left off of the original album.
The weirdest thing happened to me while I was listening to that album, just that one, where I had my earbuds in, I'm sitting here doing work, and just for no reason, I still can't figure out why, the volume kept creeping up on my on my iPad. I'd just be listening, and I'd look over, and like the volume kept kicking up like notch by notch by notch, and I was like, okay, someone really wants me to rock out to this.
Dave Grohl jumped into your player and was basically like, you can't listen to this at normal volumes. What the hell's the matter with you, Chris?
So I got to say, though, I kicked off everything with Sonic Highways. Wow, man, I really dug that. I loved different vibes from all the different songs. You know, there was one that gave me like an ELO vibe. There was one that gave me like a Skynyrd vibe. There was one that gave me a Bowie vibe. Such a solid album.
It really is. And if you get a chance, I'm not sure if it's available anywhere, like either video or on demand or anything, but I think if you're a fan of music, you'll really appreciate the documentary, because I mean, people would argue that maybe the documentary, like the music that they recorded, maybe didn't reflect it, but it was really cool how they recorded each song at a different recording studio. You know, they'd go to Chicago, and you know, they'd talk about like, you know, the scene in that area. Then they'd kind of like record a song in the style of something that was kind of particular to that era, or at least area rather. And if nothing else, it's just really cool how Dave is just very in tune to their influences. And you know, Taylor Hawkins, their drummer, is very big into Queen, and the songs that either he's leading on or even the songs that he's produced or helped write, like you could tell, like they really wear their influences in a way where it's less insulting or like self-parody, but they really kind of get the idea of capturing a mood, and especially with things like Bowie, especially because it was really cool to see them sort of do that and do it really justice. Yeah, that whole album is really fun, and I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it, but they did a couple of sessions not too long after that at a hotel. I can't remember which hotel it was, but it was called the Saint Cecilia EP. It's really good because that album, like, it's surprisingly heavy. Like, it kind of calls back a lot of like the early Foo Fighters, where it's just distortion and them just really just shredding. Like, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, the guy loves not just music but music history. Like, I love that about him. Like, he's into his music, but he's also into everything about music. Like, did you see?
He has Pat Smear from the Germs join his band, and then does Probot so he can jam with dudes from like rad metal bands like Voivod and Venom and stuff. He clearly has knowledge and respect for other genres, so I appreciate that, because there's a whole generation of people that were introduced to bands like Napalm Death because of Probot and it having the Dave Grohl name on it. You know, people.
Right.
Pat Smear, who knows what the fuck he was up to after the Germs and before the Foo Fighters, probably learning how to actually play the guitar. But like, hats off to the Germs, man. I fucking love the Germs, and he got punk rock royalty to join his band.
But yeah,
did you guys see or hear about the documentary Sound City?
I did hear about it, and to tell you the truth, I'm upset that I didn't get a chance to check that out yet.
Me too. It's one of those things that I've been meaning to watch, but just haven't got around to it.
Yeah, that's the one about the competitive tickling.
No. What?
Yes.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Have you guys seen the trailers for Tickled?
No, I have not.
Oh, is Dave Grohl in it? No, make a note. You have to. It has nothing to do with the show, but just look up the trailer for Tickled. It's out in theaters now in select cities. It's remarkable. It is a documentary about competitive tickling, and somehow it takes a turn and gets dark. So after you're done going down the Simpson wave rabbit hole, check out that trailer, because this movie looks remarkably fucked up.
All right. So back to Sound City.
Wow, that's all right.
That's how it works, bro.
That is how it works. To be fair, that's how it works.
That's how it works.
I knew what I was coming like, to. I've heard your show before, so I can't even act like I'm shocked.
This is what happens when I don't derail the show completely into a subject. I'm just like, by the way, make a note, check it out. And I just sit back and be quiet.
We were going to give the show the tagline, we don't go off on tangents, because that implies we were on a path in the first place. Yeah. So, all right. So Sound City is a documentary about a specific soundboard of basically from Sound City Studios in LA, and a whole bunch of legendary albums were produced in this studio. And apparently, it's a soundboard made out of wood. And Dave Grohl believes that it just puts out the warmest, best music. And so he did a documentary about the closing of Sound City, and where he went in and he bought a whole bunch of the pieces, and he goes into the history of the studio and a whole bunch of stuff like that. So I remember him talking about it once, and I've been meaning to get around to it, and I'm dying to see it, actually.
That sounds boring.
I don't know. Go see
Tickled.
Check it out.
Or Nirvana. See both, because apparently you're not allowed to do it.
Like, these are the people who use, and he believes that the best albums that came from the studio, artists like Nirvana, Chili Peppers, Fleetwood Mac, Neil Young, Tom Petty, Rage Against the Machine, all these people recorded there and claim that the sound that came out of this particular studio was just the best.
Maybe it's just like a super exclusive studio that sounds good and has the best producers, so only the best guys could afford it. You tell me that, and it was like a dude who recorded in the back of like a gas station, I would be impressed. Like, I don't know, you know, it just sounds good when I record in the garage, and like David Bowie showed up to record an album there, I'd be fucking impressed, and I'd be like, I gotta check out this soundboard. But machinery is machinery. Surprise, guys, booze is just booze. Tequila doesn't make you do different things than beer does or whiskey does. It's just alcohol. It's not mystical. It's just a soundboard. Find whatever that model of soundboard is that they had and just go buy one, Dave Grohl. You don't have to buy the fancy, expensive one.
You know what, man? I don't know, because you always hear about the weird things of like the smallest little, maybe it's the particular tile that was laid down there. Maybe it was the position of this wall is at a certain angle. Like, you never really know.
Well, that's a good point. But if you buy anything from that studio and don't just recreate it exactly, you're not going to have the same sound. So he shouldn't have gone in there and bought shit. He should have just outright bought that fucking studio and kept it in business, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That actually is an interesting point, though, not to mention it.
He has enough money. He could have just bought that studio and kept it open.
Yeah. I'm reading here, and he bought it and put it in his own personal studio.
Right. What a dick. He should have kept it open.
Wow.
He should have kept it open, because you don't know. I mean, there are situations where it's like the Doors went to a restaurant, an Italian restaurant in L.A., to record vocals for Riders on the Storm.
You know, is this where the episode turns and now Dave Grohl's a dick?
Right, yes. No, so there are, like you brought up, there are specific situations. There are rooms where people go and they're like, you mic this room this way. There are reverb chambers. There are places where there are four walls and the ceiling and the floor all tiled in the exact same tile to get a specific reverb pattern. And you mic it, you know, close, and you mic it far, and you'll get this effect. People have figured out some stuff, but there's some of these studios where they're just like, yeah, they have specific soundscapes. So he allowed the ruination of one and then hopped on and was just like, I'm a hero because I bought these things. Like, no, you let it close. You could have saved it, and you didn't.
You know, I would go with you on that fun rant, how we turn on people. However, Dave Grohl, I can't go with you there, because Dave Grohl has a reputation for being one of the nicest guys in rock.
It's like, that's kind of what I understood. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
there's
stories here and there. You know, like I said, going back to The Color and the Shape, you know, that story of the fact that he and William Goldsmith, the Sunny Day Real Estate, did not get along, and he basically re-recorded all of his parts without his knowledge. But granted, Billy Corgan did the same thing to, like, everybody in the Smashing Pumpkins that wasn't, you know, Jimmy Chamberlain, rather. So, you know, it happens. And maybe when it comes to, like, an ego thing, let's be honest. I mean, the guy's got a big one, but at least he sort of wears his heart on his sleeve at the same time, though.
Well, yeah, I like Dave Grohl as a person. Billy Corgan is the motherfucker that writes albums for Courtney Love. So you brought up a guy who was like the antithesis of Dave Grohl because I don't think Dave's on Courtney Love's side. I think he's just got the sense to be polite and somewhat smart about it.
Well, he was smart, though, because if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I can't remember if they ever confirmed that, but I'll Stick Around, which was, you know, one of, like, the first singles was actually written about Courtney Love. So I feel like they kind of got it out of the way. And at that point, it's like, at least publicly, they never really spoke of it again. But granted, they did have that really bad legal battle where, you know, Courtney Love kind of came back and tried to sue them. You know, because what was the one song, You Know You're Right, that we now know is like the last recorded Nirvana song. And I think there was a legal battle where she was sort of fighting with Dave and Kurt about not having it released or something like that.
Well, there was some sort of issues prior to the box set coming out. But they came to terms and the boxed set did come out.
Right. But yeah, it's like when it comes to Courtney, I mean, come on. I mean, that's a whole other podcast in and of itself. Like, I would argue, though, that Nirvana would have broken up whether or not that had happened or not. So let's just say hypothetically, I feel like if Kurt Cobain, you know, didn't, you know, off himself that night, I think after a while, like, they would have broken up. They never would have stayed together. And the thing is, it's sad because, you know, not that I dislike Nirvana. Like, I love them. I think they're a great band. But had it not been for them ending, I never would have got Foo Fighters. And, you know, that's just kind of my start into a lot of things. I mean, shit, like, I can't tell you how many, like, short stories I've written based on their songs, which is kind of sad. Hell, I'm going to tell you something really embarrassing and kind of geeky I did in eighth grade. All right, so eighth grade, well, let's say seventh and eighth grade is, like, the height of, like, my Foo Fighters love. You know, they've pretty much done, like, what, two albums at this point. Yeah. Super into them, but also Star Wars Episode One came out. And look, like you said earlier, where, you know, a lot of people went and saw those movies, they didn't badmouth it until like a couple years later. I actually kind of pulled like a Weird Al and rewrote the lyrics of the first Foo Fighters album, but using Star Wars Episode One.
Oh my God, we need to make this happen.
Somewhere in a box.
I will make this happen.
If we ever do a follow-up, I will actually find, like, I actually wrote down the lyrics of all these songs that were basically rewritten that were, like, themed after, like, Star Wars Episode One. And I kid you not, if I were to, like, retype them, you'll read them along and see exactly, you know, where the references are made. It was probably the most depressing thing I've ever written. But I stand by it because I thought I was being so brilliant.
I need to hear it.
This might be brilliant. We have to make this come to fruition.
Oh, God. Like, because there's no tabs at all. It was all just strictly lyrics. But if you follow along the melody of, you know, the songs themselves.
If you give me lyrics, I will find tabs and I will do my best to have one come out each week on the Dave podcast.
Oh, God. I don't know where they are. I know they're probably in storage or in a box somewhere. But I swear to you, this is a thing I did in eighth grade. But yeah, my Foo Fighters fandom ran deep, and it's weird. Like, not that I don't still like them, but, you know, the last few albums don't necessarily hit me as well. But even so often, I'll go back and revisit. Like, matter of fact, in preparation for the show, I was listening to a bunch of Foo Fighters, and I'm like, holy shit, like, this is a lot of fun. And I feel like their best songs are the ones that never got recorded, or at least not the ones that ended up on albums. One of the best songs I feel like they've written was from one of the worst movies, the Godzilla movie, the one from 98.
Right.
They did a song, A320, which is essentially about a plane crash.
Okay.
But it's kind of done in this really sort of like, oh, this is pretty sweet. Until like the last line, like before they kind of like rip into this instrument, you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is not what I thought this was going to be about. And then I realized if you play that song after Learn to Fly, it's kind of like this really sad epilogue.
Oh, good Lord. I can give you the other side of the coin because I respect Dave Grohl. I like that he's brought focus to a lot of people that wouldn't have had any focus on them had it not been for his fandom. I guarantee you if I met that guy, I would like that guy. But I put him in the same category as Aerosmith, where it's like, yeah, I respect you, but, you know, I don't need to fucking listen to your music.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's not any song that you're really into?
No, there's none that I love. I own zero Foo Fighters. I've heard a lot of it, and it's okay. I've got friends that are huge Foo Fighters fans. Well, I own Probot. I own that first Probot album. But I'm just like, yeah, it's okay. I kind of think that the people just like feeding on the dick of Dave Grohl.
What?
Are just like there's so many other guys. Like, why is Dave Grohl so huge, but Loudon Wainwright can't get a sold out show at Madison Square Garden when he's a genius? Like there are so many other dudes that deserve some love. Like Dave Brocky from GWAR, for God's sake, was brilliant. Why was he not on Probot? That guy's amazing. I sort of feel like we like to have rock gods, and we've made Dave Grohl into a rock god.
I think he's earned it.
I think so. I think he's earned his stripes. You know what it is? Like, it's funny. As someone who enjoys drama and deep stories, believe me, like, I love all that. But every so often, it's kind of like comfort food. Like, look, you know, for a fact that as far as, you know, music goes, like I said, it's not necessarily going to change necessarily your life. You know, it's not necessarily teaching like this big social message, but if you're just looking, just basically, it's kind of like, you know, as sad to say, it's just kind of like, you know, good time music.
All right, I'll admit it, I'm jealous. The guy is a genre busting artist who seems to constantly be working on music. That perfectly fucking describes me, the guy sitting here with zero success from music. I have made hundreds of dollars, you guys, from music. But I'll tell you what's more impressive about it. I make it a tenth of a penny a play from Spotify. So, Green Korean, when you go to sleep tonight, you make an Octopus Caveman playlist and you play it on silent when you go to bed because you might make me a full dollar by morning.
Think about it. You're... like, this is kind of like at near the beginnings of Nirvana when he, you know, he was playing for a lot of different bands, like on tours before Foo Fighters really kind of came up. And Tom Petty, of all people, is giving you an open invite to join your band and you decline. You know, on one end, you will say to yourself, okay, that guy's an asshole. Like, why wouldn't you take that opportunity? But here's a guy who's like, you know what? I could either, you know, join Tom Petty's band and be pretty set, or I could take a chance to kind of do my own thing.
Nirvana is in the echelon of the Beatles, though, at this point. Like,
I don't know about that.
It is in the minds of fans. I
don't know. I love Nirvana, but I feel like there's a lot of people who say they love them more than there are people who actually listen to them still.
Well,
yeah, I think they're well-respected, but I don't know if they're in the echelon of the Beatles.
Let me clarify. As far as popularity, for sure they are. Nirvana represents a state of mind. The Beatles don't anymore. I meet kids that absolutely know who Nirvana is. You know, we're talking teenagers who wear Nirvana shirts, represent themselves as Nirvana fans. That is part of who they are. I'm Nick, the Nirvana fan, right? You don't meet kids that are like, I'm Bill, the Beatles fan, just to go with the alliteration. But I have met 20-somethings that do not like the Beatles or do not know who the Beatles are, but they know who Nirvana is. Nirvana, sad to say, is going to go down as the 90s Beatles.
I don't know. I think Kurt Cobain, as great as he was, kind of a hypocrite. You know what? I'm going to just flat out say it. You think about a guy who, you know, when Bleach came out in those early recordings, you know, clearly was about the music. Let's be honest, though. Nevermind is a pop album. And not that I hate it. I love Nevermind. I think it's great. But, you know, here's a guy who, you know, as you understand, was so kind of, like, I guess, turned against his sudden fame that, you know, it kind of wrecked him. And then he went out of his way.
Damn near killed him.
I was waiting for it. And I'm so glad that you did it.
Internet high five.
You know, it's like, okay, here's a guy, you know, like, as far as you could tell, he sort of resented the fact that they became, like, this whirlwind success.
I don't think he did one bit. I see him, and I see him as a guy playing up a persona. And this is coming from a guy who spent the first 10 years of his career playing up a persona prior to podcasting when I was just like, well, I'm just going to be a fucking dude, and I'll own my honesty. I see him in the same light as I see Bukowski. I see a guy who's playing up a persona, when I see him doing interviews and he's like, I'm going to put on these weird glasses and I'm going to put on this weird boa because I think it'll be funny. I think he is a man like Morrissey, where he just secretly has like a weird sense of humor and he's inflicting it upon us. I think Kurt Cobain was probably a very funny, likable, nice guy.
Oh, not, definitely not discounting that, but I just feel like...
I think it's him just playing up his persona of like, yeah, I'm the guy that everybody says talks like this, so I'm going to talk like this, and I'll just, you know, I'll just say some stuff about, like, you know, whatever, man, it's all the government. Or I don't think he had a clear point of view. Like, he's certainly not as together as, like, Anonymous or even, like, the Republicans now. They have a clear point of view. His point of view was what? Like, you know, like, fuck it, man, you know, like, whatever.
You know, yeah. I have, going back a little bit to what we were talking about before, I have the definitive proof why the Beatles are better than Nirvana. Beatles sported Pete Rose hair.
That's true. That's true.
Son of a that bitch.
Absolutely.
You broke the code.
Yeah. That's it. We figured it out. By the way, though, anybody old enough to remember Pete Rose is old enough to hate Nirvana.
Not for nothing, though. At least the band was kind of instrumental, no pun intended, in ending hair metal, like, once and for all.
Yeah.
And not that I dislike hair metal. I loved it, but it's like, okay, by the time the early 90s came, it's like, okay, this is clearly done.
So let's wrap up Grohl, Foo Fighters. I mean, do we have any closing thoughts?
Go listen to Octopus Caveman. Fuck the Foo Fighters.
Wow. So this whole rant for like the last hour was essentially an Octopus Caveman advertisement.
This One is big
a,
plug.
This is a secret plug. You guys, I got a new album out. It's called No Shame in Losing. It's phenomenal.
Buddy, just record the Foo Fighters songs with Adrian's lyrics. You could cash in.
I'm actually upset that I even mentioned that because that's a long buried secret.
If you send them to me, I will make it happen. We can make an album together, buddy. Oh, yeah. You send me the lyrics and the album Pete Rose Hair will come out.
Buddy, get writing. Episode 7 is out. Let's get some fresh lyrics.
I don't know if I can do it anymore because I'd be thinking about it, but...
Do or do not. There is no try.
I don't know. Me in the late 90s was a weird guy. All I did was like listen to like Foo Fighters, Prodigy, and like watch Star Wars and like a lot of Matrix.
Hey, I got one last thing for Foo Fighters over here. Did you guys see the Robot Chicken Foo Fighter sketch?
No, I don't think
so.
And I love you. Cha cha cha.
Mr. T, I'm Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters. I am so honored you wanted to come check out one of our band rehearsals.
Quit your jibber-jabber. It's time to fight some fools.
What are you talking about?
What's your name? The Foo Fighters, right? Then why aren't you fighting fools? What's all this mumbo-jumbo about music? Come on, let's go fight some fools.
I think I've actually heard that before.
Bring it around to my fucking Mr. T standoff.
That is kind of amazing.
Okay. All right. So with that, should we close out Dave Grohl?
Yeah, let's call Dave Grohl a day.
I don't have a featured Dave this week.
I don't have a Dave of the week either.
So in that case, we're going to ask you to keep following at Dave King thing. He won last week's Dave of the Week. So just keep on following, liking, and retweeting his stuff and support the comedy of at Dave King thing.
I swear
okay,
to God.
Okay, so racist Dave never made a comeback?
No, thank God he did not. Blame the Green Korean for that, by the way. That's not me.
All right. Any other stuff we got to talk about?
Yeah, everybody go listen to Adrian Has Issues. It's a phenomenal podcast, and I'm a big fan, and I love Adrian to death. Despite what you might have heard go down on this show right now, I have liked him, and I will continue to like him. And I will continue to subscribe and enjoy his show. Everybody go review it. Adrian, I love you, buddy. And I can't thank
Likewise,
you.
Likewise, man. This has been so much fun.
Well, buddy, yeah.
It's all love here. Trust me. Like, your musical views, no matter how off base, trust me.
Well, buddy, let's tell us about your show.
Oh, okay, shoot. Well, it's me pretty much sitting down and interviewing people, whether they be comedians, comic book creators, fellow podcasters, writers, actors, I don't know, jugglers, who knows. Basically, the idea is getting people together to have a geeky conversation about whatever it is you're into. And yeah, like the guy said, it's a really cool show, and I have so much fun chatting with my guest. And let's see, where can you find me? Well, the main website is adrianhasissues.com. I'm on iTunes, Stitcher, I think I'm on Google Play if you use that. And I'm also a member of the Tangent Bound Podcast Network. And yeah, the whole show is the idea of, okay, we all read comics, we all, you know, read stories, but yet, do you really know anything about the people behind them and what it actually takes to create some of that stuff? And it's essentially, what I like to say, it's like the geek version of Inside the Actor's Studio without a creepy James Lipton.
You know, something else about your show that I do like is you do stick to, you know, the geek stuff. But every so often, you'll do an episode. Well, I guess gaming is a little bit geeky, too. But you'll go into gaming, you'll go into music, you know, just the things that you're passionate about. And when you're talking about things that you're passionate about, it comes across and it makes for a very entertaining episode. Even if, you know, I'm not a gamer, but I'm still listening to those episodes because I hear you talking with someone very passionately about the subject. I'm like, yeah, okay, I might give this a try. I've never picked up a controller in my life, but yeah, I'll go for it.
Well, yeah, thank you. And that's kind of the whole idea of the show, because as it took me several... You know, geekdom is more than just superheroes. And there's a lot of things that people geek out about that aren't necessarily traditionally geeky. And one thing about me is music is as every bit of important to me as, let's say, comic books or, you know, video games. So any chance I get to talk about that, I do. And matter of fact, I used to run a blog called Hop Snobbery, which is about local and unsigned music, but it's been a while since I've done it, but I've rebooted the blog, and now it's actually part of adrianhasissues.com. So in addition to the podcast, there's also guest appearances of other shows I've been on, but there's also music blogs, and you know, it just started, so you know, it's a little slow going, but I've been kind of doing more and more with it. And a matter of fact, not to tease too much, but yet I will have some more musical guests on the podcast in the near future. So I hope people have really been enjoying those episodes, because some of them are literally just me and some friends of mine kind of just talking about bands that we've loved from maybe way back when. And I'm really glad that people have been listening to those, because I was really worried that maybe that would be too off, you know, out of center. But yet people have really responded to those. So I've been doing a lot more because, like I said, music is pretty much as close to me as comic books. So I'm glad that I was able to marry the two in some weird way.
So in order to end out our show, we've got to find out the end results to our vote. The best hair competition, we've got reigning champion Patrick Swayze, who has beat out Morrissey. He's beat out David Lynch, with I actually don't agree with. He's beat out Kurt Russell in the 80s. So we put him up against Pete Rose, and best hair goes to Patrick Swayze with 92% of the vote. And I got to say, hats off to the 8% of the vote that went to Pete Rose.
Well, the only problem was I wasn't able to vote because I was doing a podcast.
The Pete, yeah, it would have jumped up to 12% maybe. So don't get the Pete Rose haircut. Go out and get yourself a Swayze mullet, bros. Swayze wins overall, even David Lynch, weirdly. But yeah, there you go. Pete Rose haircut. Not a good idea.
Coming up next week, what are we doing? Dave the Nerd joins us for David Gilmour.
One of my favorite Daves. I love David Gilmour. Right. Pink Floyd is top 10 bands for me, easily. Love it.
Adrian, thank you so much for coming on the show. Please go check out his podcast, Adrian Has Issues. It's one of my favorites. It's on my regular rotation. So for the Dave Podcast, I'm the Green Korean.
I am Octopus Caveman.
Like sands in an hourglass, these are the days of our lives.
We are the days he knows, he knows. We are the days he knows.
These are the days I know, I know.
We are the days he knows.
Now these are the days.